pigeon murder, pigeon murder, pigeon murder, pigeon murder!
Welcome to Antique Tea, where the things that terrify you in history sometimes still terrify you today. My name is Erica Mighty. I'm a voice actor, improviser, and I just sewed a pair of pants that are essentially just duvets for your legs, and I want to wear them all the time.
Like bell bottoms, or?
They're like, you know how there's a subset of women of a certain age, often art teachers or ceramicists, who wear like exclusively architectural linen.
Yeah, say no more. Like the second you said art teacher, I was like, oh, I know those pants.
I've known for a long time that that is my future.
Perfect.
And I found this pattern for pants that are of that shape. Sewed them in a fabric that was way too heavy and basically just quilt fabric. And gotcha. I don't even care.
Yeah, they are flowy linen. Yeah.
Heaven on my legs. Awesome. Even if they like stick out in their very distinctive shape all the time.
Amazing. My name is Jason Hayes. I am a dad, an improviser, and I'm a little hungover today because I had a couple of cocktails that I have. Tyler Quinn, an improviser. At Curious here in Portland, introduced me to a cocktail. I think he invented it. It's called the sleepover
party? Okay.
The slumber party, maybe. I think he invented it, but he turned me on to it, and I feel like a stupid like sorority girl. It's a little bit like a sorority girl drink. It's a vanilla vodka and soda and like Coca-Cola.
Okay. So it's just like a vanilla Coke, but alcoholic.
Yeah. And there's a big old squeeze of lime though, like a quarter of a lime, like a bunch of, I'm sorry, not lime, a lemon juice.
Okay.
Like a big old squeeze of lemon juice, which I think it would be disgusting if it didn't have the lemon juice, but like I bought a bottle of vanilla vodka and it's now in my home. I now have them at home. They're so good. It's wild. It's so wild. But anyway, I'm basically a sorority girl now.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, today's episode is going to be a little bit different because it's spooky season. Halloween's coming up in just a couple of days. And we thought there's so much legitimate horror in history. I mean, truth is stranger than fact, right?
Yeah.
That we should take yet another quick detour and tell a scary story from history or profile somebody who did something scary, which might be more accurate. But we didn't want to do the usual, you know, genocide or property destruction or, you know, environmental collapse. We figured we'd do something a little bit more specific to us because Jason happens to have a very specific phobia.
I have several specific phobias. but this is probably the most I have met other people that also are deathly afraid of pigeons.
It's called Columbophobia.
Oh no way, it has a name?
It does.
Columbophobia?
Yes, I found this out because when I was looking for pigeon stories in history, I found out that Nikola Tesla, of all people, was columbophilic. He was obsessed with pigeons.
Huh. Ugh, gross. I am deathly afraid of them. I don't, like, birds in general freak me the fuck out because, birds are scary.
I mean, that I get. I am not a bird fan. They're little fucking dinosaurs that have.
They're little
yet.
Dinosaurs, and even the dumb ones, I'm all like, "Are you just playing dumb? Like, are you actually a like?" I feel like they're all smarter than they appear to be.
Sure.
Not chickens. Chickens are stupid. chickens are straight up. I actually like chickens. Chickens are cute. But crows. You hear so many stories about crows. Like crows remember.
Sure. Yeah.
And like they'll fucking attack you if you like if they like and they'll tell their friends and their friends will come over and attack you if you have like once maybe possibly been near their nest like a year ago.
Yeah.
They will come back and haunt you with other pigeons that I mean with other crows that didn't even have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, pigeons are on the dumber end of birds, I think.
Okay.
Which I guess makes them scarier in a different way.
Sure.
And they're sort of everywhere. Like
the birds kind of way.
Yeah, but I actually think those are crows.
But you can kind of picture pigeons doing that, like being at
that
famous
everywhere.
Square in Venice, right, where there's tons of pigeons and them just like swarming you.
That's so terrible. It all started when I lived in New York City, and there are lots and lots and lots of pigeons in New York,
mm-hmm.
everywhere.
Yes. Is that the end of this? Like, there's just lots of pigeons there, and that's where it started?
Oh, you want to know, like, the origin story? Sorry.
No. I thought you were getting into it, and then you just paused.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's those sorority sister drinks. Slowing me down this morning. Yeah, I have several pigeon stories from New York, but I would say the very first one, I mean, I was always, when I lived there, they're everywhere, and I was always like, and like I still to this day, like will veer like far around them if they're like,
oh, when we were at Sketchfest in Seattle, you just like stopped in the middle of the sidewalk once, and I was like, what's going on? There was a pigeon like 2 feet in front of you, and you were
they
waiting
don't get
for,
out of
like,
your way, like they don't fucking care, they don't get out of your way, and they're just like. Yeah. So I was, I worked in Times Square when most of the time that I lived in New York City, I worked for the Actors Union, which is right in Times Square, which is, I don't ever suggest getting a job in Times Square because it's terrible.
Was this pre Times Square being what it is now, like pre Disney Times Square? It was sort of on the cusp of
that,
right?
No, it's not. It was not.
I remember going to New York around the time you were there, and like Times Square was still like it wasn't pre Giuliani Times Square, but it wasn't what it is now either.
Right. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Giuliani was mayor when I lived there. So.
Okay.
So yeah, I lived there like 2000 to 2004. So. Sure. Yeah, so, but it still was, you know, it's still a tourist destination, right? It still was always packed with tourists. And pigeons. There's lots of pigeons in Times Square because there's food on the ground, like everywhere, right? Like, I worked right above the giant McDonald's. There's always McDonald's. Anyway. And so I was walking to lunch to my favorite little deli to get a Reuben, which I got so many. I've had so many Reubens from there. I don't think that place, like all New York places, I don't think it's there anymore, sadly.
Yeah.
And so I was walking up 47th around the corner to Broadway, and the Palace Theater, the very famous Palace Theater, is right on the corner of 48th and 7th Avenue, I think. And I was turning the corner right in front of the Palace, and a pigeon was on the ground. And this really like kicked my, what's it called again?
Columbophobia?
Mm-hmm.
Like Columbo, the TV. It was very hard to Google, actually, because there's also a Columbo fan site called Columbophobia.
So my Columbophobia was like activated full force. I was just walking innocently. And I'll never forget Aida, the Elton John musical, was playing at the Palace at the time. And so there's like these giant posters of this beautiful woman, Aida. I'm walking, and I was like, I remember looking at the poster, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this pigeon, I guess somebody, you know, walked, and finally the pigeon decided to say, oh, I guess I have to get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it flew up, and its wing hit me full in the face because it was like it lifted up to fly. Like I could feel the feathers like touch my nose and like my face or whatever.
Yeah.
And it didn't like hit me, like not full. it wasn't like full roller coaster Fabio kind of action or anything. Do you remember that story?
I feel like what happened is maybe worse. Like there's something ickier about like a soft caress than just a whack, you know?
Yeah. And so I screamed.
Sure. As you do.
And like tourists all around stopped. And I was just like, and they were like, no one knew what to do. And I just turned around and I just ran back to my office. And since, you know, it was an office building, we're in Times Square, there was no, like the lobby bathroom was always locked and like closed. Sure. So I couldn't even run into the back. So I had to get in the elevator and then go wait to go up the fucking elevator into the 17th floor. I bolted out the elevator and went into the washroom and just like scrubbed my face and just was like hand soap, like, and then like putting it all over my face. It was so terrifying. So then from then on out, I was always expecting to walk near a pigeon. And then that sort of face off that you have, like, who's moving? Do I have to walk around you? Or are you going to sort of flutter out of the way? Right.
Like a bird does
when you're driving down the road and you're like, that bird's not going to move. And then they always do. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like every time I'm walking down any sidewalk and there are pigeons, mm-hmm. that they're going to not budge.
Sure.
That we're playing a game of chicken. I'm playing a game of chicken with a pigeon. That at the last minute, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, I should move because I'm a pigeon. And they're going to fly right into my face. I mean, that's what I think every time I see a pigeon and I'm walking towards it.
That explains it a lot. I could imagine that being a really traumatizing experience.
I can feel it in my body right now. Like I can like. Bleh.
Now I want you to close your eyes, Jason.
Oh no.
I want you to imagine that you're in Times Square, but it's empty. Everybody's in their buildings. And it's just you on the street with 1,000 pigeons.
Oh, stop it right now. Okay, keep going.
How do you feel?
Is this therapy?
No, I'm trying to drive you further into your, into your negative.
Yeah, I would just, I'd paralyzed. I would feel paralyzed.
Sure.
I would probably throw a brick through a window to get inside.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'd get a brick in Times Square, but maybe a trash can.
Okay. So you're paralyzed. You're looking for a brick. And then you look around again and you notice that all of the pigeons are on fire.
What? That sounds great.
Well, okay.
Perfect. Then they're dead.
Unless they fly into you and caress you gently with their fire wings.
Fair enough. That's also terrible.
This is a direct reference to the story that I'm going to be telling you today. Have you ever heard about Olga of Rus or Olga of Kiev?
Oh, yeah, we go way back. No.
No, I ask because this is one of those stories that comes up a lot in like Reddit, ask Reddit threads. What's the craziest story from history that you know, or who's the most badass woman in history? This story of Olga of Rus or Olga of Kiev pops up a lot. And it is pigeon adjacent.
Okay.
Conveniently for me, because I've had a lot going on this week, it's also a very old story. Yeah. It dates back to, I think, before the year 1000.
Oh, wow. That's earlier than I thought.
Yeah. There are a lot of like snarky write-ups of it, but I was able to trace it back to its sole original source, which is a Russian document called the Primary Chronicle, or the Provest, and then a bunch of stuff I can't pronounce.
Sure.
Which has conveniently been translated, and it is way the fuck out of copyright. So.
Before the year 1000? Yeah, I think we're solid.
So if you know the story, you probably haven't heard the original text of it. And if you don't know the story, the original text is pretty great. Nice. And also, it's written in almost a run-on sentence, which I'm sort of delighted by. So what I thought we could do today is I'll tell you the story of Olga of Rus. We'll go through the primary chronicle, and I want to hear how you're feeling as we go through it.
Oh, so this is therapy.
Yes, but I'm not trying to make you feel better, Jason. I'm trying to make you feel worse.
Well, don't this you have is to abusive get worse
therapy.
Before, don't you? Ah, oh, nice. I feel like though there's maybe I'll come through it on the other side feeling better, you know?
Sure.
Like you always have to, I imagine immersion therapy is bad until it's better.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So and maybe this will be good for me long term.
Could be. And I want us to do our usual thing of like, we're talking about Olga. How do we feel about Olga? Would we want to be friends with Olga?
Sure.
Dish some tea on Olga, right?
Depends on her relationship with pigeons, really.
Fair.
She pro-pigeon? We'll find out.
Yes. No spoilers. What you need to know to sort of set the stage, Russia isn't Russia yet. Russia is still like a conglomeration of Russic peoples in like city states. So Olga is married to Igor, who's the leader of Kiev, which is its own little, it's its own thing.
Okay. Olga, so pause. This is a real historical story because Olga and Igor, that it almost sounds like caricatures of ancient Russian people. Like it sounds like if I were to write a funny little story, those would be the main characters. This is a real story.
It's presented as a real story,
but these people really lived.
We think like, so. I mean, here's the thing: the document is like over 1,000 years old.
Sure,
right? And it was written, or the document's a little less than 1,000 years old. It was still written after Olga was long dead, and there's elements of it that are a little like Beowulf-y or Gilgamesh-y in the sense that like Beowulf-y. This is probably pretty heavily, you know, mythologized, right?
Okay.
But we're not going to find Olga's journal, right? So my feeling is, for shits and giggles, let's treat it as fact.
Okay.
It's almost certainly not explicitly fact, in part because Olga is now a saint. I'll drop that in front. She is an Orthodox saint. And whenever you're dealing with saints, you're dealing with hagiography, you're dealing with people trying to, you know, pump them up. It is what it is.
Yeah. Posthumous miracles, like creating miracles after they did, you know, after they're dead.
Right. Yeah. We are pretty sure there was an Igor and we're pretty sure there was an Olga.
Okay.
Interestingly, Olga wasn't ethnically Russian, we don't think. It seems like she was Scandinavian. So there's strong like Viking vibes throughout this story.
Yeah.
She's famous. The reason she's a saint is because she was an early convert to Christianity, which is not a part of this story. But the story of the conversion is pretty great. You want to hear that first?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So after everything that we're about to talk about takes place, Olga goes down to Constantinople, where she meets with Emperor Constantine, the emperor of the Byzantine Empire. You're just like staring at me.
No, I'm listening.
Oh, you're just hungover. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So she wants to be able to trade with the Byzantine Empire and with the Romans, which means she has to become Catholic because they don't want to like deal with any pagans. But she's a very clever broad. She's always thinking, how can I make this work out for me? She's also like the only female monarch that a lot of these people will ever have dealt with. So whenever she runs into a king or an emperor in this case, according to the story, at least, they always want to get married to her because then they'll just be able to like take over Kiev.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So it's in her best interest. She's actually queen because her son is really young and her husband's dead.
So she's queen regent?
She's queen regent, but acting queen. And it's in her best interest, like Queen Elizabeth I, not to get married.
Yeah, right. She would stop being queen, eh?
Well, and her son then wouldn't be queen. Her son would probably get killed in favor of any babies that she had with the person she married.
Excuse me. Sneezing.
So she goes down to Constantinople. And Constantine meets her and says, well, you need to get baptized. Otherwise, we're not going to do trade stuff with you. And she says, well, Mr. Constantine, I don't know why I'm giving her this voice, but I am.
Yeah, hey.
I would be offended if anybody other than you baptized me. I'm just not interested unless it's you that baptizes me. Otherwise, it's an insult.
Oh my God. Do you think that's the first instance since anyone's ever treated baptism as like a sexy thing? Like you just totally made baptism sexy.
I don't know. I mean, I'll take credit for it.
Right. It's like baptism kink or something out there. That probably exists.
Yeah.
Okay. So she's playing it. She's playing it. She's obviously playing it.
Mm-hmm. So Constantine is like, yeah, sure. Of course I will baptize you. And he takes her to a river and he dunks her, right? And then gives this whole speech about how you and I are now brothers and sisters in Christ. You've made me so happy. You're a part of the family. You know, we're now together, siblings under Christ the Father, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then he says, oh, by the way, you want to marry me?
Gross. You're my sister. You're now my brother. We're now brother and sister under Christ. Let's get it on.
And that's exactly what Olga says. She's like, ah, incest? I could never marry my brother.
Well, just in Christ, though. Come on.
But she's able to use this as a way to like get the baptism, get the like perks that she wants.
Yeah,
the trading perks, and not have to marry Constantine. She basically outwits him. Wow. I mean, I set it up a little bit too, obviously, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
And this ultimately is what Olga is known for. The two things she's known for. One, she converts. Her son, I don't think converts, but her grandson does and converts the rest of Russia, which is why she's a saint. But she's also known for being fucking smart and like tricky. And that's what I enjoy about her.
Okay, cool.
So let's pop over to the Primary Chronicle. The year is, I think, 945. It's listed as 6453, but I don't fucking know what calendar the ancient Rus people used. So
6453?
In the year 6453.
I don't know anything besides just like the calendar I know.
I could not be bothered to look it up.
Cool.
In this year, Igor's retinue. So Igor's the king, right? Igor's retinue.
So she finally does marry someone.
Well, she was married to Igor before, and Igor dies. Spoiler.
Oh, this is pre his death.
This is pre Constantinople. Yeah.
Pre everything you just set up.
Pre everything I just said. Yeah.
Gotcha.
In this year, Igor's retinue said to him, "The servants of Svinald are adorned with weapons and fine raiment, but we are naked. Go forth with us, O prince, after tribute, that both you and we may profit thereby." Igor heeded their words, and he attacked Dereva, which is like a neighboring city-state in modern Ukraine. He attacked Dereva in search of tribute. So basically, he goes over to this neighboring city-state because he doesn't like his clothes. And his people don't like their clothes. And he's like, if we conquer Dereva, then we can make them give us clothes in tribute.
What? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Well, that's what it says. Clothes?
They're clothes.
And weapons. Weapons and fine raiment, but we are naked. I'm just reading it.
Right. So basically, it sounds like they like their clothes better.
Could be. This is how I choose to interpret it. Yes.
Gimme. Okay.
Yes. We're wearing Target. They're wearing Dior.
I mean, I'd maybe invade a neighboring city state for some Dior if all I can afford is, you know, Massimo. If I have a bigger army and only can afford Massimo,
we're invading Milan. So he goes with his followers and he collects the Dior from Dereva. And then he decides he's going to go home. He says, go forward with the tribute, guys. I shall turn back and rejoin you later. He dismisses his retainers on their journey homeward, but he wants more, like, Dior. So while they're going home, he turns around and goes back to the city with a couple other people.
Okay.
Now, the Derevlians are not stupid. They get word that Igor's coming back. You know, he's taken all the Dior, now he's going for the Hermes. So they go to their prince, whose name is Mal, which is, again, just like straight out of like the anime about this, right? They go to Mal and they say, quote, "If a wolf come among the sheep, he will take away the whole flock one by one, unless he be killed. If we do not thus kill him now, he will destroy us all." Because that's how people talk. Yeah. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. So they send a messenger to Igor and ask him, you know, why are you coming back? Igor is like, because I want your Hermes, bitches. Right. And so they kill him.
Oh, okay. Oh, because he's coming back without his army.
Right. He's just sneaking back. I know.
That's so stupid.
My mother would call that testosterone poisoning.
Right? Like, how dumb do you have to be? You're like, I'm going to bring my whole army to conquer you to take your shit. And then I'm going to, like, was he going to try to, like, sneak in incognito style, you know? Like, what a...
Who knows?
That's so dumb.
He's gonna dress up in some of the Dior he stole just to sneak in and look like he fits in.
Right? Well, I imagine they don't have any left. He's got to put his target on. Maybe they gave him... That's so funny. Okay, well, what a stupid ass idiot. And
yeah.
So he's been killed, rightfully so.
He's been killed, and he's buried in a tomb where he drops, essentially. Right near the city of Iskorostin in Dereva, which is somewhere in Ukraine.
Okay.
Now, Olga was Igor's wife. And Olga was still in Kiev with her son, whose name was Sviatoslav.
That's a great name.
Right? Olga gets a message from the Derevlians. Which I can't read that word without thinking that they're like an evil alien race in Star Trek.
I was just thinking that. Captain, we have a message from the Derevlians.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay. So the Derevlians ping her communicator and the face of one of the Derevlians pops up on the screen.
Right.
And he says, "See, we have killed the Prince of Rus. Let us take his wife, Olga, for our Prince Mal, and then we shall obtain possession of Sviatoslav and work our will upon him." So it's the same deal, the same thing Constantine wanted to do, right? Marry Olga, take over Sviatoslav, and then they basically own Kiev.
Yeah.
So they send their best men, 20 men, from Dereva. 20 men from Dereva to Kiev. And they go by boat because there's a lot of rivers in the Ukraine, I guess. And they arrive below the city of Borachev. Then there's this like really long description of the architecture of Kiev at the time, which we're just going to skip utterly.
Are they sending 20 men to go and like have her choose which one they want her to... They hope she marries?
No, they want her to marry Mal, who's like the king of Dereva.
Oh, so they're sending dudes to go get her.
Basically.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep. The only important thing about the whole like giant architectural diagram is it seems like Kiev is sort of on a hill. And there's waterways that sort of flow below it, but the royal residence, whatever you want to call it, is on top of the hill.
Fair. It's a good place to have one. Yeah.
Yes. So some of Olga's servants come to her and they're like, "The Derevlians are here. The Derevlians are here." And they summon her presence. She comes.
Put up the shields. redirect power from the engines. Double up the shields. Pew, pew. Okay, keep going.
She walks down the corridors of her spaceship to the bridge.
Okay. That was a lightsaber sound.
No, but I think we should continue to use it. Yeah.
I'm trying to use the pneumatic door sound. I can't do that.
Something like that? No, that sounds like a gunshot. No.
Yeah.
A very bad gunshot. Okay. In any case, Olga gets all dressed up. Olga, if nothing else, is very good socially. Like, she knows yeah. how to welcome a guest. So she goes and meets some of them. The Derevlians then say, ha ha, it was us that killed your husband, which is like a great way to get a woman yeah. to marry your king. And they say, we did it because he was like a wolf, crafty and ravening. But our princes, our prince, who has thus preserved the land of Dereva, was good. So you should come and marry our good Prince Mal.
So I have this picture of, like, in the movie version of this. It's mm-hmm. like, she's in her chamber, whatever, and there's, like, the view down, because they're, like, view down about below the city or whatever, because they're up on the hill. And she's, like, sitting at, like, a table, like a dressing table mm-hmm. with them. I guess, did they have mirrors back then? I don't know when mirrors were invented.
I don't know.
Yeah. And she's like slowly, like, I don't know if they had makeup, but she's like slowly putting on jewelry, whatever. And then there's like pew, pew, like gunshots outside and explode, mm-hmm. you know, like the men are taking the castle or whatever to come and get her. And her serving lady like comes in, slams the big wooden door and is just like, Olga, Olga, madame, madame, they're coming for you, they're coming for you. And she's just gently like putting on, powdering her nose or whatever, like, that's all right. I'll go, right? And there's like mm-hmm. chaos all around her, but she's like, I got this, right? Let me put on my lip and I got this. Yeah.
I think you're right on. I think that in the movie, she's played by the woman who played Queen Cersei.
No, yeah, totally. Like, I'm kind of picturing Queen Cersei's like chamber, like looking right? out.
Cersei is Olga adjacent. They're yeah, cut from yeah, the same yeah. sort of cloth.
Yeah, love it.
So Olga is now in the bridge with the Derevlians. I'm just going to keep running with this metaphor. Crazy
mixed, it's like we have some crazy mixed visuals we're giving our listeners today.
I know. But this would make a good sci-fi movie, genuinely. I would love like a sci-fi retelling of this now that it's been proposed. So Olga says, your proposal is pleasing to me. Indeed, my husband cannot rise again from the dead. I desire to honor you tomorrow in the presence of my people. Return now to your boat and remain there with an aspect of arrogance. I shall send for you on the morrow, and you shall say, we will not ride our horses nor go on foot. Carry us in our boat, and you shall be carried in your boat. Thus, she dismissed them to their vessel.
I love that they come to take her prisoner, and she's like, go back to your boat.
Yeah.
Like, actually, not right now. Like, if you could take me prisoner tomorrow.
Yep.
That's what you're going to do.
But it's framed, right, as like, I want to give you this great welcome in front of the people yeah. of the city. So they yeah. send, she sends the Derevlians back to their space cruiser and tells them to like robe up in their best shiny robes made out of upholstery fabric, because I'm pretty sure that's how all sci-fi costumes are made.
Perfect. Maybe your pants are the ceremonial garb, the pants you just made.
If I'd made them out of something shinier, absolutely. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. And I intend to do that, just for the record. Perfect. You know, why not go all in?
Yeah.
The important thing here is she's saying, go back to your boat, act really arrogant when my people come, and command that they just like literally carry the boat in, like up here, instead of like walking or riding your horses. We're going to literally send slaves to carry your boat.
Oh, they're slaves?
Well, I said, I don't know, peasant, or serfs. I'm going to send the serfs.
975, so probably. There's
probably unpaid workers. I don't know that.
So slaves.
Yeah.
So slaves. Okay, so they're going to literally like take the thing that they can escape on and carry it up the hill?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Like in that Werner Herzog movie where everybody almost died.
I don't know that.
You don't know this story? You know who Werner Herzog is?
The documentarian?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
This playing puppy reminds me of all of the horror innate in the human experience. That guy?
He makes documentaries though, right?
Yes.
He made the doc. Oh, he made the documentary about the people that carried the boat in the Amazon. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, but that was like he made real movies. I mean, documentaries are real. He made a narrative movie where there was a plot point where a ship needed to be carried over a mountain, and he insisted on doing it, not even with practical effects. He insisted on like, we're literally going to carry a ship over the mountain.
Okay. Do you know the story about the people that carried the boat in the Amazon?
Yeah, there was a documentary about it. That's about the movie Werner Herzog made. So I think he made the movie and then there was a documentary about them. I could be totally wrong, but this is what I'm pretty sure we're talking about.
There's a document. So he did this crazy thing where he wanted the... Okay, moving on. I'll look into that and I've heard about it, but I haven't watched it. But I thought that story was crazy. So
Werner Herzog plays Queen Cersei's right-hand man.
Yes, yes.
And he says to the Derevlians, "Park your space cruiser right outside of our ship, and we will send our best fast ships to escort your ship directly into our ship, like a ship inception. You don't need to take your..."
Shipception.
Anyway, we get the idea.
This is derailed into a black hole.
I'm enjoying it, though.
Me too. I just don't know if I'm able to follow all of the mixed metaphors.
It's a very simple story. You're doing fine.
Yeah, right.
So, something rang. Weird. Okay. So, that night, the Derevlians go back to their ship. And Olga orders that a large, deep ditch be dug in the castle with the hall outside the city. So the way old castles work, right, you've got like the main castle building and then there's a whole big space with a lot of other smaller buildings and then a wall around it, right? So yeah, we're going to dig a ginormous hole right in the middle of our compound, our keep.
Okay. Like town square kind of thing.
Yeah. Then the next morning, Olga sends Werner Herzog to tell the Derevlians, "Olga summons you to great honor." And they reply, just like she told them to, "We will not ride on horseback, nor in wagons, nor go on foot. Carry us in our boats." Now, Olga hasn't informed her people that this is the plan. So the people of Kiev are like, "Ugh, they're turning us into slaves. We're going to have to carry the boat. The princess is going to marry their prince. We're going to be like murdered and everything's going to be horrible." But they pick up the Derevlian boat while the Derevlian ambassadors, envoys, are in their best clothes. It says sitting puffed up with pride on their benches.
Sure. What kind of boat are you, Matt? I keep going between a canoe and a giant sailing vessel, but I'm sure it's somewhere in between.
I suspect if they're carrying it. I'm imagining a Viking longboat sized thing, and those aren't actually that huge.
No. Okay.
So then the people bring the ship into Olga's court and drop them in the fucking trench.
Right.
Boat and all. Olga bends over and asks, "Do you find this honor to your taste?" They're like, "This is worse than what we did to Igor." She says, "Well, tough noogies." And says they are...
Is that directly from the text? Yes. Tough noogies? Okay.
"And thus she spake tough noogies."
"And thus she spake..." Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah, so she commands that they be buried alive because they've got to fill in the big hole in the front yard, right?
Sure. And it's not practical.
Yeah. "And thus they were buried."
What dumbasses? There's a lot of dumbass people in this story. The king was a dumbass for going back alone. These people are dumbasses.
Yeah. Olga then sends a message to the Derevlians saying basically, "Look, you insulted me by just sending 20 people. These were not the best people." Now we're getting into Trump. "You didn't send your best people. Send me your best people. Because that's the only way I'll go to see your prince. You've got to honor me by sending the best people."
But they don't know on the planet Derev. What is it called? What's the town called?
Yeah. The tight beam messages haven't reached the planet Derev yet.
That she's done all this. She just wants more guys.
Right.
Quote, quote. That's what they think.
Right. They think that she's just putting up the 20 mediocre dudes. And then they're going to send a whole bunch of better dudes to escort her back to Derev.
They have no concept that she's getting the upper hand.
Yeah, she's a woman.
Yeah, right.
So the Derevlians hear this message and put together their best men, which it seems like are the local governors and the local aristocracy and send another group of people over to Kiev.
On a boat?
It doesn't say. But probably a star cruiser. So then the Derevlians arrive and Olga says, "Oh, you poor things. You look so tired and dirty. You should go take a bath." Now, we're living in a place in an era with public bathhouses. So she orders that the bathhouse get warmed up, the water get heated. She says, "Go get cleaned up and then come and see me." So the bathhouse is heated. The Derevlians presumably strip off and go in to have a nice soak. And Olga's men close up the bathhouse behind them and burn it.
Wow.
So they're all burned alive in the bath, which sounds challenging to execute, but this is what happened.
Right. Like, we have a bunch of water and you're setting it on fire. That seems, yeah. Yeah.
Don't think too hard about it.
Yeah. And these people are so dumb. If you go and you try to conquer someone and kidnap someone and force them to marry someone else, if you're going in to conquer them and they're really nice to you, maybe think twice about accepting gifts or doing anything they say. Mm-hmm. Like maybe have some skepticism.
Yeah.
If the people that you're conquering are too nice to you. Just saying.
You bring up a good point. Like, this story adheres pretty closely to some famous story tropes, right?
Oh, which really?
Like the Trojan horse story, right?
Oh, or, fair, yeah.
There's a bunch of, like, old Icelandic and Norwegian and British stories about, like, women who did similar, like, tricked a bunch of men by being cleverer than them.
It's also a way to, like, make women into shrewd monsters too. Like,
yeah. Yeah. You know, I read an interesting paper about, or bits of an interesting paper about that, because I was looking for like any other sources that could could flex this
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's not exactly the case. So in Viking cultures, in like Scandinavian and Germanic cultures, women were acknowledged as being less physically strong than men. I mean, they weren't going to go out and be warriors. And honestly, right. That's fair. Like, yeah. I work out. You don't work out that much. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, or at all. Yeah.
Yeah. You could still take me in a fight, right? Just by virtue of having dude muscles. Yeah. That's just how it works.
Yeah. Physically, men and women are often different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in these Germanic and Scandinavian cultures, women were seen as being intellectually on par with men.
Well, that's great. That's cool.
Yeah. They were acknowledged like, you can have a business. You may have to get into politics. You know, once you have kids, focus on the kids, which again, kind of fair, because it's not like you can get pregnant, right?
Yeah, I mean, I could.
This is pre-surrogacy. I mean, I
could, you know, like you could have the baby and then go back to the business that you created.
That's true.
And then, I don't know. Anyway, but still.
They weren't quite that enlightened. But yeah.
For you know, living over 1,000 years ago, that's pretty fucking great. I mean.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of these stories that follow sort of similar pathways of women using superior wit and superior cleverness and intelligence to get what they
prowess. Need. Tactical prowess in war, even.
Yeah. So this is definitely, you know, a story that's become myth over time. Like, Lord knows things probably did not happen quite like this. But we can still learn a lot about how, like, women were perceived in that era. And since we don't know differently, again, I choose to believe that this is the God's honest truth, because we can't know. It's more fun that way.
Why not? I mean, that's why everybody believes the Bible, just FYI. Yeah, awesome. I love it. Well, that's cool. I was really approaching it with a cynical thought of why women were, you know.
Yeah.
What filter was put upon this to make women look like XYZ or whatever. So that's cool that the culture, the that they I don't want to say allowed women, but they perceived women and treated women.
They acknowledge that women kind of as, yeah.
Acknowledge women of that equality in many ways. That's really mm-hmm. cool. I didn't know yeah. that about.
This is not an anti-Olga telling of the story. This is pretty pro-Olga. Right.
Cool.
So the bathhouse burns up and the best and brightest Derevlians are all burnt to death in the bathtub.
Perfect.
Olga then sends another tight beam over to the Derevlian ship or the planet Derev, whatever, and says, I am now coming to you. So prepare great quantities of mead in the city where you killed my husband, that I may weep over his grave and hold a funeral feast for him. So this, when I read this the first time, that was my big, God, they're fucking stupid moment, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah.
Why? So I did a little more digging into this too. Apparently in these like early Scandinavian Germanic cultures, there were like rituals surrounding funeral feasts. And one of them was that if there was a woman ruler of a territory, mm-hmm. if at the end of this feast, she served mead to another man, that was a way of ritualistically acknowledging him as being the new king.
Mm.
So the Derevlians are probably reading this as like, okay, she's met our best and brightest. She's been convinced. Now she's coming. We're going to have the funeral service as is traditional. And then yeah. she's going to give her mead to Prince Mal and acknowledge totally. Him as future husband. Right. So that right. makes it make more sense.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's she's playing it. She's playing the long, smart game.
She is. So the Derevlians hear this and immediately start brewing as much mead as they possibly can. Olga takes just a small escort. And it says she made the journey with ease. I'm just picturing her on like a palanquin. She probably rode a horse or something. I don't know. And she shows up at Igor's tomb. She weeps. She does all of the right things as a widow, right? She grieves yeah, publicly.
Yeah. Does it indicate that she was like fake grieving or she's probably, nope. I mean, she's legit sad.
Sure. It says she wept for her husband. That is the total amount of detail we have as to how sad she was. So either she's good at fake crying or she cried.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Either way. After she's done her traditional weepery, she orders that a funeral feast be served. So the Derevlians now are like, yeah, yeah, okay, we're getting to the good part.
Right, right.
And they all start drinking the mead because they're like, this is how this works. At a funeral, we get really fucking drunk.
But she didn't bring the mead.
They provided the mead. They yeah. supplied.
Okay, so she's not poisoning them.
No, she's not poisoning them. Okay. Now, the Derevlians have noticed that their best and brightest didn't show up with her.
Yeah, you think?
So they ask, hey, Olga. Hey, Olga, where'd you put our aristocracy? And she says, don't worry about it. I'm having them escorted by my husband's old bodyguard staff. They're going to show up in just a few minutes. Don't worry. So the Derevlians are like, yeah, okay, cool. And then they go back to getting really drunk. Her people are not drinking quite as much. And the Derevlians don't seem to notice. So at a certain moment.
You take the fake sips.
Yeah, yeah. You just get your lips wet with the mead.
Mm-hmm. And then you put it down, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe dump a little on the ground. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can be like alternate. There is like, I'm pretty sure a scene in The Witcher 3 game that is
that
this.
A video game?
Yes.
Okay.
Also a Netflix series. No? No?
Don't know.
Henry Cavill looking maximally
ripped.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like sweaty ripped. Like.
Sure. That's the best kind of ripped.
Yeah. You should watch it.
No. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, so she leaves and she goes to her leaders and says, all right, they're really drunk. Kill them.
Fair. That's...
Yep.
But wait, she only brought a small amount of people and she's like.
Yes. But according to this story, they're all trashed.
Right. But she brought enough people to overthrow even like trashed people. Like I just imagine there are more of the Derevlians than.
Yeah, it's possible that she brought other people like behind and they didn't know.
I mean, obviously she brought enough people that she feels confident to be like, kill them.
She brought enough people that 5,000 of them were killed with knives.
They killed 5,000? 5,000 drunk people?
Yep, 5,000 Drevlians.
Jesus.
But Olga's not done.
That's talk about Cersei, the red wedding there.
Right?
The red funeral or the red wake.
I bet George R.R. Martin read this story. Like, it's pretty famous in certain circles.
Yeah.
Olga's not done, though. Olga has, like, begun her revenge, but she has not yet completed it. So she goes back.
Prince Sato, or what's his name?
Prince Mal.
Prince Mal. He's not there?
No, I think she's dead. Or he's dead.
Oh, okay. So he's one of the 5,000.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But now she wants to go after the women and children and families.
Whoa. She just turned a corner. Jeez.
Yeah. Attack the survivors is what it says. I don't know that she's going after women, but like the farmers maybe, or the, you know, the non-military people.
Oh, well, Olga. Olga.
This is what Olga does. It was a harsher time, Jason.
I guess.
Life was worth less.
I don't know, but wouldn't you be like, now I'm the queen of this area and I want my people and I need my farmers to farm my food so I can be even more, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You don't overthrow a neighboring government or king or monarchy or whatever and then kill all of the servants or kill all of the
Would the you people. Tell Olga that?
Good God, Olga. That's not how you do it.
Then and
you
then take Olga over stabs then you.
Then you become the queen. I know, right? I would not tell her. I'd be like, good job, Olga. Good job. What can I get you?
Yep. Anyway, so she goes back to Kiev and she and her son, Sviatoslav, gather a large and valiant army and then proceed to attack the land of the Drevlians. So now they're going after all of the little villages. She wants to take over the whole land of Dereva, essentially.
She doesn't want to take over. She wants to slaughter everybody, and then you just got some empty land.
I don't know. Maybe empty land is worse. I don't know.
Just give everybody.
I mean, let's think
about
farm. Ruling a very populous country is a lot harder than ruling a very small country. So maybe she's just making her own job easier by limiting the population to her own people.
I'm pretty sure that's called genocide. I'm pretty sure you just...
Justified
genocide. I'm pretty sure
fuck me.
That's what you just did.
Yeah.
I mean, how big of an, like, physical, like, geographical area is this? I'm going to...
Look it up. I don't really know. I looked up Derev, and there is a Wikipedia page on it, or Dereva.
Okay.
But I don't know that much about it.
So Kiev, I mean, I would imagine... Okay, Kiev's right on a river. I'm just looking at Google Maps.
Mm-hmm.
Because all cities are right on rivers. And then that's a big river. Jeez. That's a big river.
Dnieper.
Dnieper.
I don't know how you pronounce it. Dnieper. It's hard to say.
Dnieper. Okay. And then what'd you say the other place is called?
Dereva.
D.
Dereva.
Dereva.
The planet of Dereva.
Yeah. Go to Google Space or whatever.
Derevok?
Dereva. Dereva. Oh, that's technically in Russia now.
I mean, I'm picturing a couple of Rhode Islands, you know? I don't think they'd be bigger than that.
I'm not sure this gave me what
I needed. Of Manhattans.
Okay, but I wonder how far it is. Like, that's what I guess what I'm thinking. That's really far.
I just don't know.
Anyway, I'm just interested to see, like, what she's conquering.
Yeah.
You know? Like, this is real interesting as I...
the important thing is that
they
take care of some of the local villages. She really wants to take over Iskoristan because that's where her husband was killed. And it seems like that's the seat of power for Dereva. That's where all the Dior was.
Can I Google that?
Iskoristen.
Slow down. Isk.
O-R-O.
O-R-O.
S-T-E-N.
S-T-E-N. Oh, that's not far at all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it makes sense that it would be that they're next door to each other or something.
Oh, yeah, that's super close. Okay. Okay.
So,
I have a geographical image of what it's like. So she's like taking over little neighbors, like her neighbors.
Yeah, like you're in Portland. She's taking over Salem.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Just far enough away, but.
Yep. Like I'm in St. Pete. We're taking over Tampa. Yeah.
Perfect. Yep. Okay.
So the Derevlians see the writing on the wall and they barricade themselves inside the city. So we're looking at what's going to be a siege. This is actually how most medieval wars went. Like it was a lot of siege stuff because the cities are often walled and.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Always. Yeah. If I'm a farmer, I can't think of a witty Russian name.
Farmer Sven. I don't know.
Sorry, Farmer Sven.
Is that Scandinavian?
Sounds Scandinavian. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Farmer Dimitri.
If I'm Farmer Dimitri and I'm all like, oh shit, Olga's coming to murder everybody. She already murdered the king and all of his, you know, royal court or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'd go to the city.
Well, yeah, you would, because they can just like burn down all the shit outside the city walls. But like the city stores of food.
I'd find a fucking cave is what I would find. I would find a fucking cave and I would get like. I feel like that going and barricading in your city never ends well. It always ends with them burning the city down.
No, man. Sieges work a lot. First of all, the cities are stone, so you're not burning them down that easily. Yeah. Second, well, a lot of the cities are. Some medievalist is going to come at me for this because I'm getting it wrong. But as I understand it, it's really hard to get past those initial walls. You have all of your stores and all of your like. Mm-hmm. Extra food and all of your, you know, armory stuff, that's all inside the walls, so you can fight back fairly easily.
Fair.
And it really becomes a waiting game of like who's going to get dysentery first. Wow. And whoever doesn't get dysentery first wins.
They don't. So like like it's an Oregon Trail.
Yes. Oregon Trail medieval.
They do not depict that in war.
Dnieper Trail.
They don't.
No.
They do not depict that part in war movies.
No.
The sieges are a little more dramatic than sitting around waiting to get dysentery.
Well, and they take a really long time. It says Olga remained there a year without being able
to
hit the
city.
Shit. And that's not that unusual for medieval sieges. They can
They're
take a fucking
outside?
Long time. Yeah. And they set up like it's a battle of the supply chains. So dysentery, who gets dysentery first, right? And also who runs out of food first.
Yeah.
So she's getting frustrated. She hasn't been able to take the city for a year. And then she thinks of a plan.
Yeah.
She sends into the town a message. She says, "Why do you persist in holding out? All your cities have surrendered to me and submitted to tribute so that the inhabitants now cultivate their fields and their lands in peace. But you had rather die of hunger without submitting to tribute." So she's not killed everyone. She said, like, you need to pay taxes to me. And if you agree to pay taxes.
That's how you do it. That's how you take over.
Yeah. She just killed all the, like, army guys.
Okay. She went around killing, scaring people until they
paid taxes.
Yeah. And called tribute or whatever.
Yeah.
And took the knee.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the Derevlians, who are exhausted after a year of siege, are like, cool. No, we are more than happy to pay taxes. Just like tell us what you want and we will pay you that shit. Do you want more Dior? We'll get you more Dior. Right. And she says,
space Dior.
Yeah. She says, you know what? I don't need your space Dior. Okay. I've already avenged my husband's death twice in different creative ways. And then a third time when I met with your army. I'm pretty well avenged at this point. Yeah. But I do need to get like a small tribute from you just to prove that like you're in this with me. And then after we make peace, I'll go home. So the Derevlians are like, okay, well, what do you want? Like, do you want furs? Do you want honey? Olga was like, bitch, you don't have any honey or fur in there. We've been sieging you for a year. She said, no, actually, there's only one thing that I want. She says, give me three pigeons from each house, three pigeons and three sparrows. I do not desire a heavy tribute like my husband. I just want three pigeons and three sparrows. I know you're poor.
From each house? Like mm-hmm. everybody has at least three pigeons in their house? Like what?
Yes. So back in like the ancient world, the medieval world, all the way up through like the world wars and to modern day in some places, pigeons were domesticated. Yeah. They weren't kept as pets, right? But as messengers,
messenger pigeons, yeah.
Sure. Like pigeons are really useful and you can eat them. Yeah, so it's if you look at medieval structures anywhere from like Israel to Europe to anywhere there were pigeons to China, you'll see what are called dovecotes, which are like big stone walls with little stone burrows in them for pigeon keeping. Hmm. It was just commonplace for people to have pigeons.
Okay.
So they're like, yeah, all right, that's awesome. We can give you three pigeons and three sparrows each. Killer. And they sent those pigeons and sparrows to Olga with nice little Hallmark cards.
I always wondered when there's like you see pigeons or sparrows or birds like sending messages. How did that fucking bird know where to go? Like, that always seems so crazy to me, right? You're like, go to the village or go to the castle on the hill. And the pigeon's not like, okay, can I have like GPS directions? Like, what the, like, I don't understand
how my understanding passenger of it,
pigeons work.
My understanding of it, and some passenger pigeon fanatic is going to get on me for getting this wrong, but this is just my understanding of it,
mm-hmm.
is that homing pigeons know where home is. So if you know you're going to need to send a message to the castle, you take one of the castle's pigeons. And then when you let the pigeon go, the pigeon flies to the castle because that's where home is.
Okay.
And there may be variations on that, but that's one way that it works.
So if you're sending a message somewhere, it's probably not your pigeon.
That seems very plausible to me.
That sounds fair.
But I don't know for sure. We can look it up, Dad, but we're not going to, Dad. Sorry, I got a phone call from my dad saying, you know, you and Jason were talking about gators the other day. Do you remember that conversation? G-A-I-T-E-R-S. Uh-huh. He was like, well, you described spats, not gators. So I want to suggest that Jason be your Googler. And whenever you give the definition of a word that you only 95% think that you know, just have Jason Google it. Have that be part of his job.
Perfect. That's about in my skill set too.
Yeah. I said you can send a formal email to antiquetpodcast@gmail.com requesting that, and I'll read it on the air.
Snap. And now
I'm making fun of him, and I know he's gonna listen to this too. So I think that's how it works, and I'm not gonna look it up.
Well, I'm Googling it right now. Keep going.
What? How homing pigeons work?
Oh my god. Yeah. I just went to the Wikipedia article, and the thing that popped out in my it says the passenger pigeon was sexually dimorphic in size and coloration.
Yeah, that just means women look different than men.
Oh, it means they look different. Yeah. Oh, I thought they looked the same. Oh, no, never mind.
Dimorphic.
Okay, gotcha. Sorry. For some reason, I thought that meant. I'm tired and
anyway.
Obviously don't know what dimorphic means.
Almost done with the story.
Okay.
So she gets the pigeons. Now she's got tons and tons of pigeons. Your favorite.
Mm. Three from every house. That's a lot.
Uh-huh. Let's see. What am I up? Yeah. Three pigeons and three sparrows. The Derevlians go home. Everyone's happy. There's big parties everywhere. So Olga then divides up the pigeons and sparrows, one to each member of her army. And she says, army boys, I want you to attach by a thread to each pigeon and sparrow a piece of sulfur bound with small pieces of cloth. When night fell, Olga bade her soldiers to release the pigeons and sparrows. So the birds flew to their nests, the pigeons to the cotes, and the sparrows under the eaves. Thus the dovecotes, the coops, the perches, and the haymows were set on fire. There was not a house that was not consumed, and it was impossible to extinguish the flames because all the houses had caught fire at once.
Sorry, I sort of blacked out for a second.
Right at the high point of this.
No, yeah, no. I heard it all. I understand, but how did the pigeons catch fire?
They had sulfur. It doesn't say. My assumption is that they lit the sulfur on fire before setting the birds free.
Maybe like a thick TNT, and it has the little
There's a string hanging from each one. Sure. It's
By the time they get home, by the time they get to their little, because they're homing pigeons, so they go home, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So imagine
by the time they get there and roost, I just imagine the little Mission Impossible song playing as they fly home. I guess they're right outside the city, so it probably takes like 4 minutes or something.
Yeah. I mean, imagine living in an apartment in New York City, and there's pigeons that roost all over the outsides of those apartment buildings, right?
Oh, trust me. Trust me. Yes, I know.
So imagine seeing all of the pigeons in the city with their legs on fire, flying home simultaneously to all of their roosts all over the city.
That is
and
terrifying.
You just see hordes of flaming pigeons outside of your window before your house, your apartment building, is thus consumed in flames.
Right. You just see them coming at you. Mm-hmm. Nothing you can fucking do. That is horrible.
I told you we'd get to pigeons.
That is horrific.
Mm-hmm. So the people.
I'm feeling a little mixed about Olga. She's super smart, and it's like, don't fuck with me. I can murder people in about 50 different ways. Mm-hmm. They're very creative, which I think is pretty astonishing. But then also, she's murdering tons and tons of people, which is not great, right?
But it was a different time. And from the articles that I read, again, I'm not trying to justify genocide.
No,
from the articles that I read, if a people kills your king, you're allowed to do basically whatever you want to those people.
I mean,
you can demand blood tribute.
Sure, sure. But then, I'm also good for you for killing all those pigeons. Assume the pigeons did not survive.
I mean, I think if we went to Kiev today, we would find plenty of pigeons. But those particular pigeons probably did not reproduce further. No, sure. It's a pigeon-free zone in Kiev. It's the only city in the world that doesn't have any pigeons. They were all killed.
Well, I would imagine if I was other pigeons outside of Kiev, I'd be like, don't go there. Like, they light their pigeons on fire. Like, they attach little bombs to their feet, and I'm not going to Kiev, so.
Yep. Yep. So anyway, Olga wins. The people who flee get taken by her soldiers, and she kills some of them and keeps some of them captive and makes other ones slaves, and the rest of them have to pay her a really big tribute that is not just birds. And she takes over Dereva. And the story ends with her hunting posts and trading preserves are there still.
Wow. That is so... That site is going to haunt me.
Good. That was my goal.
Flocks of pigeons on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Coming for me.
If I can provide you with a brand new nightmare today, I have done my job.
Perfect. Perfect. Because when you had me close my eyes and imagine all of the pigeons on fire in Times Square, I'm all like, brilliant. They're dead. They're on their way to dead.
I mean, that's a more worthy nightmare than the nightmare I had last night.
Oh.
Which was that I won a prize where I got to stay inside this old famous English castle, an Airbnb room kind of.
Okay.
And then I went out to get food from their fancy restaurant, and it was a buffet, but the buffet cost $97 based on the half a plate that I did and the poundage cost. And then I left the plate somewhere and didn't get to eat it.
Aww.
And I woke up feeling just bereft. So upset that I didn't get to eat my half a plate $97 fancy English castle buffet.
You should call that into Curious's hotline for dreams.
I should. I should.
Yeah, yeah. I heard you already did that. Yeah,
I did.
So
how do we feel about Olga? We've kind of discussed that. I mean, I'm team Olga in this instance. I think she had very few options. And for her to keep Kiev and keep her city intact, she needed to make sure that nobody was coming after her and after her son. And she kind of did what she had to do in a medieval kind of way.
Definitely.
And I think she would go about it. I think she's smart enough that she would go about it differently if it were happening today. You can see her as like the CEO of a company trying to hold it against a corporate takeover and finding much less bloody ways to do it that are very clever.
Yes. Well, yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's solid medieval realness. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that all tracks with medieval behavior.
Oh, my God. Can we make Presley a Halloween costume as Olga of Rus with like fake pigeons swirling around her?
Puts like it sort of trumps the woman from the Birds.
Yeah, like nobody would get it though.
Tippi Hedren. Yeah, yep. I see lots of Tippi Hedren costumes with like that 60s outfit and the Birds all over.
Yep.
Yeah, no one would get like a Viking looking woman with flaming birds all over her.
If we ever do a live show on Halloween, we'll invite people to do their best historical Halloween costumes. We'll all get it because everyone will have listened to all of our episodes and they'll know exactly what she's doing.
Awesome.
Or be a good drag costume too.
I definitely think that all of that is like creative. I mean, mm-hmm. that's like, those are some creative ways to win a war by not doing much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not aggressive. It's not, testosterone poisoning? Like, it's not just being like, well, how do we defend ourselves? How do we, you know, kill a bunch of people? How do we be aggressive? We go in swords high in the air, right? Just mm-hmm. running in. It's like convincing someone to get their boat carried and then dumping them in a hole mm-hmm. or pretending to have a big party and getting everybody drunk and then just fucking killing 5,000 of them mm-hmm. and then setting homing pigeons on fire and unleashing them on their home city. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all pretty creative. I mean, that's not your typical warfare strategy.
No. Now, we have talked a little bit about pigeons as like being common in the medieval world, right? And mm-hmm. when I was researching this, the biggest horror element to me was actually something I learned about pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know,
anything pigeon related is a horror story. So I believe it.
I mean, I'm an animal lover, right? Like, I've got two dogs. You've got some pets as well.
A dog and a cat.
A dog and a cat. Very cranky cat.
And a hamster.
Yes, I forgot about the hamster.
Don't forget the best pet in the house.
Like dogs and cats, which have evolved to live with humans, pigeons are that. They're animals that have evolved from prehistory to live around and with the support of humans.
That's why they don't fucking move as you're walking down the sidewalk, because they're like, y'all are pigeons, like y'all are humans, whatever, we live in.
But think about it this way, Jason. Think about it this way. All of the pigeons that we see in New York City or in Venice, they're kind of like abandoned pets. They're considered feral, not wild. So they're comparable
abandoned pets. That's taking it real far.
I don't
abandoned
think so.
Pets?
It would be like if we all threw our dogs out and made them live in the street.
But nobody did that. They're birds.
Yes, they did that. They're homing birds. They have a home. They mate for life. They have wives, Jason. I learned all of these things.
Don't.
I'm pigeon shaming you.
Don't.
Like, the worst part of this story is that all of those pigeons are sweet pigeon pets who want to have homes, and we've abandoned them to live without our love and support in the cities of the world.
The best part of that story was imagining thousands of pigeons burning to their death. That's actually the best part of that story.
Well, let's agree to disagree.
I'm going to have like PETA after me.
Any words of wisdom, Jason?
Right. Well, now that we're talking about, I know that uh, I have, I have one last. Can I jump into my little section about my,
my final
story in my book? I have a couple. I have actually several stories about pigeons, but I'll do this one. It's my friend Gemma, who I haven't spoke to in years and years and years. But we lived in Korea at the same time when we taught English. Mm-hmm. And she is like a crazy bird lover. Like she's so like, she loves birds. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, we always would joke about how I'm all like, birds are weird. And mm-hmm. she's like, birds are amazing. And she especially likes pigeons. And I was always just like, ugh. And so we were hanging out at her apartment in Seoul. And she, you know, it's like a nice day. So she had all the windows open mm-hmm. and a pigeon just flies in and lands on her windowsill.
Sure.
And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm like, close the windows, close the windows. And she's like, no, what? No, it's just, you know, coming and sitting on the windowsill. I was like, but your windows, like I was freaking out. I started freaking out because I'm all like, next step is pigeon flies into home and.
And gently caresses your face with its wing. Yes.
Exactly right. And then sexually harasses me.
Yes.
You
feel little pigeon wings on your butt as
exactly,
you walk through the city.
Right? Right? No consent, pigeon. I do not consent. And so, yeah. So I start to freak out. So she walks over to the window, me thinking she's like, okay, my friend is panicking. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna close the window, right? Mm-hmm. And she goes over and she just puts her hands around the pigeon and just picks it up. Mm-hmm. Just like picks it up. The pigeon doesn't fly away. Mm-hmm. Just she's like the pigeon whisperer and she just picks up the pigeon.
Because they're all lost pets looking for the love of Gemma's around the world.
Turns around and it's just like, see? And I screamed and I ran out of the apartment. I just left. I just fucking left. And I might have come back. I don't remember, but
you never spoke to her again.
Yeah. No, yeah. So then a year later later that summer, mm-hmm. later that year, right before I left Korea, I left like a week or so after my birthday in June. And she gave me a book called Canceled Flight, 101 Tried and True Pigeon Killing Methods by A.V. Jones.
And we'll link this in our bookshop.
Yes, it is it's a fabulous book. He's collected, actually, I don't know if it's, I won't gender them. Because A.V. Jones, they have collected 101 ways. Mm-hmm. They're like recipes. It's like a recipe book. And it has really a dark, mm-hmm. so you gotta be into dark and the murdering pigeons. And, but a bunch of different artists, tons and tons of artists have done drawing and prints and stuff depicting.
Depicting pigeon massacre?
Pigeon genocide. And it's fabulous. It's the only kind of genocide I can get behind. And so it's really actually a really cool coffee table art book. It's really, some of the art is really, really cool. So
I want to read when I'm going to a cocktail party at my friend's house. I want to read about the genocide of lost pets.
It's more of an instructional manual.
Okay. Really. I want to read how to genocide.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Okay. So I'll read some of my favorites. The splitting headache. Ingredients. One shovel. Sneak up behind a pigeon and whack it over the head with a shovel. Not enough to kill it, just enough to put it on death's doorstep. Call 911 and begin a long, winded, unintelligible fit of hysteria. After 10 minutes or so, hang up. This should give the bird plenty of time to die a slow, painful death.
What's the point of calling 911 then?
They're just jokes. It's just a joke book.
I'm going to take it all so very literally and be offended.
So you get the bird's hopes up that it's going to be saved.
Oh,
so
it lays I see.
Dying, thinking... 911's coming.
But you're just like, oh, no, no. I got it.
But they never do. Yeah.
No.
The Midnight Express. Ingredients needed. One scalpel, one needle, some anesthesia, some magnets, and some thread.
Wait, can I guess, actually, like, what to use all of those for? And then you tell me what the actual answer is.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so it was a scalpel, some magnets, some thread, a needle.
Scalpel, a needle, anesthesia, magnets, and thread.
Okay. I think you sew the magnets inside the pigeon. You give yourself the anesthesia because killing animals is hard and painful and you don't want to remember it. And then you're already in a hospital because you have the needle thread and the scalpel and all that stuff. You stick the pigeon with the magnets inside it inside a working MRI machine.
Oh, it's called the Midnight Express, though.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's a midnight. Key. That's a key.
And then it dies very quickly.
Right, right. You did get the first part right. Okay. Surgically implant magnets into the backs of several anesthetized pigeons. When they wake up, explain how the next train coming through town is carrying a poisonous birdseed mixture meant to wipe out all of their species. They'll then protest by lying down on the train tracks once they realize the train ain't stopping and they ain't getting up. Tell them what's really on the train. Loaves of bread.
Okay, what's the last one?
Okay. Let's see. Okay. This is called The Filthy Habit.
The Filthy Habit. Okay, what are the ingredients?
One pack of cigarettes, one book of matches, and some peer pressure.
Oh, you just get all the pigeons to give themselves cancer. No, you tie the cigarettes to their legs and you light them on fire and they act as wicks and then you send them home to their homes and then they arson. It's just a modern idea of what Olga did.
Right, right. No, it's get them hooked on the cancer sticks.
Yeah. I like it. I like it.
So I will, some of the art is really fabulous. I'll post on our Instagram some of my favorites. And if you think I'm a fucking monster, then I don't know, like whatever. Sorry.
Is that your word of wisdom? If you think I'm a fucking monster,
you know, whatever, is that I don't actually condone animal violence against animals. I would never actually do any of these things.
But if it happened, you would not complain.
When I see a dead pigeon, I'm not like, oh. So that's about the extent of it. I would never actively hurt an animal, including a pigeon. And if I saw someone like actively hurting a pigeon, I would probably stop them.
But only after the pigeon has already reached the point of no return.
I'm not a monster. We're gonna lose listeners.
I know.
No, that story was fabulous. I would say my words of wisdom for Olga is if your enemies are nice to you, don't fucking trust them. They're your enemies.
Very wise. Very wise.
I mean, come on.
Big thank you to the medieval Rus chroniclers who wrote the Primary Chronicle. I can't even like cite that to those people. Thank you to A.V. Jones, who wrote the Guide to How to Murder Pigeons. Thank you to all of you for listening. It would be a big help to us if you tell your friends, like, subscribe. We really want to grow. We've got some cool stuff coming. And we're gonna, you can get in touch with us. That's what I'm missing.
Yes. On Twitter at The Antique Tea, on Instagram at Antique Tea Podcast, and at by email at antiqueteapodcast@gmail.com.
Yes. We hope to hear your many corrections of how I misdescribed medieval sieges and homing pigeons.
And your hate mail.
Yes, and your hate mail for Jason.
And but I expect PETA to be probably picketing outside my home.
Yep, so, but assuming hordes of rabid pigeons don't murder Jason in his sleep, we will see you same time next week back in the party tomb.